From the Tao Te Ching. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The unnameable is eternally real. Naming is the origin of all particular things. Free from desire, you realize the mystery. Caught in desire, you see only the manifestations. Yet mystery and manifestations arise from the same source. This source is called darkness. Darkness within darkness, the gateway to all understanding. The Ocean of Theosophy, Mr. Judge speaks of ancient and honorable China. Yes, ancient it is, for the secret doctrine says that the Chinese reached their highest civilization when the fifth Aryan race had hardly even appeared in Asia. The original Chinese belonged to the seventh sub-race of the Atlantean race. Thus, the current day Chinese are one of the oldest nations of this, our fifth race. Now, for this talk, let's bear in mind when studying philosophy or religious texts, when we start reading things about long, long ago and far, far away, we can interpret that as some kind of a historical statement, or we can interpret that as a metaphorical way of saying deep within the heart of the human being, of every human being, there is a movement, an action, a principle, a metaphor. So for instance, even when we talk about an ancient race, as students of theosophy, we know it's not an ancient race full of other people. We are that ancient race. And so everything that happens in that race is a part of us because we participated in it. Now, in China, was taught that the influence of the brothers of the sun, the brothers of the sun, as the masters are called in ancient Chinese literature, has exerted an immemorial influence on the race and its achievements, says HPB. The aphorisms in the oldest books of China say plainly that the dragon, we've all heard of the Chinese dragon, is a human being. A divine human being, a perfected human being, is a dragon. It is said his wisdom and virtue are unfathomable. He does not go in company and does not live in herds. The dragon is an ascetic. He wanders in the wilds beyond the heavens. He goes and comes fulfilling the decree of karma. At the proper seasons, he comes forth. Otherwise, he remains invisible, comes forth to the people to teach. The dragon feeds in the pure waters of wisdom and sports in the clear waters of life. One of these dragons, it is said, is he who is known as Lao Tzu. to whom the promulgation of the Tao or Taoism is attributed. However, he was not the inventor of it. He was the promulgator of it. Taoism actually was in ancient Honorable China for centuries before the arrival of Lao Tzu. Indeed, HPB places Lao Tzu in league with Krishna, Buddha, and Christ, who united themselves with their spirit permanently and became gods on earth. To the theosophical student of today, what is of paramount interest in Chinese literature is the ethical philosophy of this race, this ancient race. Current political conditions notwithstanding, we must bear in mind that the mystic tradition of the thoughtful Chinese of today is an ocean which is the confluence of three rivers. Today, the highest philosophy in China is the synthesis of Taoism, Confucianism, and Buddhism. Confucianism, through Confucius, is known as the resuscitator of the ancient wisdom of the Chinese people. Above all, Confucius taught noble ethics equal in rank to those of Jesus and Buddha. The Tao, which is the path of Lao Tzu, and this is what Lao Tzu practiced and promulgated, which is much more in abstract thought than what Confucius was all about. And then finally, Buddhism took root in China in the first century AD. As we said, in the life of the Chinese thinker today, these three are synthesized. So in particular, we address the path of Lao Tzu, known as the Tao. This ancient Chinese dragon, Lao Tzu, arrived among the people, it is said, according to tradition, in the common manner of many, many great ones throughout the history of humanity, in common with Christ, Buddha, in common with Krishna, Hercules, Perseus, and Horos, Lao Tzu was without a mortal father. He was conceived to a poverty-stricken mother by the influence of a great comet, according to tradition, hovering overhead at the hour of his conception. So little actually is known of Lao Tzu's early life that skeptic historians have argued that Lao Tzu as a person is but a figment of the Chinese imagination. It's a person created to spread these words. We personally don't know, but this is one view. It would be erroneous, as we said, to accept Lao Tzu as the founder of Taoism. He actually was born at a time, he was born into a society that was the most, so to speak, structured, ceremonial, ritual-based society in the world. Everything that was done followed ritual, symbols, and ceremonies. But the meaning and the purpose behind the ceremonies was lost. And this, it is said, is what put Lao Tzu on the path to be completely dismissive of these actions in the physical world and seek the truth. So his method of teaching was not one of ceremony or church or anything, but rather more so the exemplification of the principles of Taoism, less so formal promulgation. Thus, legends and fables of his teachings abound. The life of a Taoist is exemplified in the following ways. The practice of Taoism, we mean. One, through Wu Wei, which is effortless and non-forcing. Put forth effort without putting forth effort. Kind of sounds like the Gita, doesn't it? Simplicity, meaning reduce desires and distractions in your life. Humility, avoid arrogance. Compassion towards self and others, and to live in harmony with nature, balancing the yin and the yang. So, that sound a little bit like what Krishna would teach in the Bhagavad Gita? Taoism is said to be an ancient brother, so to speak, of the ascetic philosophies of India. It is said that a student of the Tao learned that, so there was a particular student of the Tao learned that Lao Tse or Lao Tzu, it's pronounced both ways, Lao Tzu and Lao Tse. Lao Tzu was in his final days among the people. And it was known that it was his final days. So this student, it is said, waited for Lao Tzu along the path that would lead Lao Tzu to the distant Himalayas, to which he would, Himalaya Mountains, to which he would retire. When Lao Tzu reached the student's hut along this path, the student prostrated himself before the sage, beseeching him to remain just a little while and instruct him in the secrets of the Tao, the way of life. And Lao Tzu acknowledged the request, stayed with the student long enough to prepare his only literary work, the Tao Te Ching. Using only 5,000 characters in his work, it is said that the style of the Tao Te Ching is so condensed, so abstract in terminology, that its profundity and scope are beyond the comprehension of the average reader. Okay. Beyond this point in the story of Lao Tzu, only fable remains. Some say he went forth to die. Others say he journeyed to a mysterious valley where all of the sages of the past dwell. One thing is known, that after his 90th year, Lao Tzu disappeared from China and was never heard from again. Now, the age of Lao Tzu was also the age of Buddha, of Pythagoras, of Confucius, Zoroaster, even Ezekiel and Isaiah. So something was going on in the world at the time where so many of these teachers had arrived. teachings of the way, the Tao, existed when, as we said, when Lao Tzu incarnated to practice in life. In the Taoist traditions, there are indications that Lao Tzu practiced the Tao in previous incarnations. In the far, now, how do they know that? Why would they say that? It's because in the far more ancient stone tablets of Si Tao Hong, it is said that from the time of the Fu Shi down to that of the Chao dynasty, in uninterrupted succession, the spiritual soul of Lao Tzu appeared, but with changed names. Okay, so we found it interesting, you know, to read it. It's very hard for the average reader to understand. But a student of theosophy might wonder, well, what could we get out of it? Is there anything in there that I can see that makes sense to me? What teachings would a student find in the Tao Te Ching? Well, the Tao Te Ching is ancient Chinese theosophy. We are told the clear, and so far as theosophy is concerned, we are told that the clear apprehension of theosophy rests on the student's understanding of the three fundamental propositions which underlie all of the philosophy, as well as all of the religions and philosophies of the world. To understand it in great depth and breadth, in whatever form or from whatever teacher it may come. So let's take a look. First proposition, as we all know, an omnipresent, eternal, boundless, immutable principle, the rootless root of all that transcends human conception. In chapter one of the Tao Te Ching, the Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The nameless is the beginning of heaven and earth. Chapter four of the Tao Te Ching. It is like the emptiness of space. First proposition, it is like the emptiness of space. O Tao, how still art thou, how pure, continuous one beyond heaven. I do not know from whence it comes. It is the forefather of the ancestors. And then chapter 5, or rather chapter 25. There is a thing inherent and natural which existed before heaven and earth. It is silent, it is boundless, modified by none, moving not, yet pervading all. Do we see theosophy in these statements? So let's take a look at the second fundamental proposition. As we all know, the absolute universality of the law of periodicity, flux and reflux, ebb and flow, the days and nights of Brahma, from the Tao Te Ching, chapter 16. All things alike go through their processes of activity and rest. And then we see them return to their original state. When things have blossomed, they each return to their root. Chapter 25. The more it moves, the more it yields. More words count less. Hold fast to the center. Cycles. And then chapter 40, with regard to the second proposition. Returning is the motion of the Tao. Yielding is the way of the Tao. The 10,000 things are born of being. Being is born of non-being. The 10,000 things are born of being, and being is born of non-being. Then finally, the third proposition, which is the fundamental identity of all souls, the fundamental identity of all souls with the universal oversoul, and the obligatory pilgrimage of every spark through the cycle of incarnation to acquire self-consciousness. In the Tao Te Ching, chapter one, consider the metaphor. When you recognize the children, find the mother. You will be free of sorrow. When you recognize the children and find the mother, you will be free of sorrow. Use your own light and return to the source of light. This is called practicing eternity. Chapter 52 of the Tao Te Ching, second proposition. The world, the third proposition. The world had a beginning, and this beginning may be regarded as the mother of the world. Having found the mother, we can know the children. And knowing the children, we shall still keep the mother. Having found the mother, we can know the children. And knowing the children, we should still keep the mother. Chapter 52. In the beginning was the Tao. All things issue from it. All things return to it. Sparks in their obligatory pilgrimage returning to the Oversoul. And then finally, man followeth the formula of the earth. Earth followeth the formula of heaven. And heaven follows that of the Tao. The formula of the Tao is its own nature. There are also statements that are related to karma and reincarnation, such as, with regard to karma, all things flourish and each returns to its source. Returning to the source is stillness. Returning to one's fate is eternal. Knowledge of the eternal is realization, but not knowing the eternal leads to unfortunate errors. And then one related to reincarnation. 10,000 things rise and falls while the self watches their return. And though the body dies, the Tao will never pass away. So these could go on. We have more from where that came, but the message here, hopefully, is that what HPB did in the 19th century was not unique to her. She did not invent theosophy, nor did Lao Tzu invent the Tao, but rather they collected what they could find and passed it on to generations beyond them. And we found it just inspirational that so much in Taoism, which we thought we really couldn't understand, is actually quite understandable to the student of theosophy if he makes the decision to study it. And that kind of validates what we've been doing in theosophy all these years, doesn't it? So we'll stop right there and invite any contributions, questions regarding Taoism or Lao Tzu. And we have to say we do not claim to be the authority. We would like to remind everyone, please take what we hear and use that if it sparks internally, if there's a strike, if it strikes the chord, please go and learn more as you see fit. Don't take this student's word as the authority. We're studying and we're passing along as best we can, please. Thank you. So yes, in the back.
Just towards the end, the talk about looking if you recognize the child, look for the mother. The paragraph that's here, it says the world has a first cause, which may be regarded as the mother of the world. Well, so much of what was presented is so theosophy, but then it talks about here a first cause. So what would
Okay, well, and that's the Tao Te Ching you have in your hand? Yeah, okay. Well, in Taoism, when one reads the Tao Te Ching, what you'll find, what the student of theosophy will find, is that sometimes when the Tao is referred to, it is the absolute principle. That's, so to speak, the unknown Tao. But then, if it's named, then it becomes the manifested Tao, which is not the Tao. Okay? So, where the book refers to mother and child, that mother is the oversoul of the universe. That is Mahabodhi. The child is every spark that goes through evolution during a great period. So, the child finds the mother in him, and the mother, the child sees the mother in other children, but should stick to the mother. So let's take a look at that. Okay, so the world had a beginning, and this beginning may be regarded as the mother of the world. So that is the manifestation of the Tao. Now it's not the Tao. So it's the mother, which is Mahabodhi, okay, which is the oversoul of the universe. Okay. Having found the mother, we can know the children. Well, we are all, in essence, identical with each other and with the oversoul of the universe. So having found the mother, having found the inner, the self within, we can know the children. We can know the self within other people. This is the basis of universal brotherhood. Okay, so having found the mother, we can know the children. And knowing the children, this is a big deal. Knowing the children, we should still keep to the mother, knowing that the he and thee is the he and me. Yet still keep to the mother. Everything is one. On the one hand, is there a you and me? We can say, yes, in this world, there's a you and me. But it's saying we should still keep to the mother. We should still see the world as one, see everything in the world as in ourselves. Yes.
So when it's mentioned about was it, if the Tao is named, then it's not the Tao.
Right.
So the Tao that is not named, is that the esoteric section of Taoism?
Our understanding is the Tao that is not named is a way of saying the absolute. We can't name the absolute. We can't attribute anything to it. We can't say anything of the qualities of it. As soon as we say, in theosophy, it started with, as soon as we start talking about the absolute, we're not talking about the absolute because we can't.
So is there knowledge of there, or is it already?
Yeah, so the question here is there an esoteric teaching of the Tao? We wonder if it's not already the esoteric teaching. So now, before, way before Lao Tzu was on the scene, Taoism had been promulgated. By the time he arrived, things were a mess. Temples, churches, what have you, everything transformed into dogmas, ceremonies, and rituals. That was the point. And he arrived having been incarnated in previous lives, knowing the Tao, and he arrived and lived the life of the Tao. Okay, so he lived the life, dismissing everything that was of materialism and ritual and ceremonial. What he left behind to this proverbial student was kind of like the voice of the silence, kind of like fragments. It's not a story about the Tao. The Tao Te Ching is fragments, sutras, similar to Patanjali's yoga aphorism or the voice of the silence. And so, and it is said that what he left this student with is so densely packed that it is not discernible to the average reader, which may imply, really, you probably need to be a little bit further along the path to have an appreciation. Now, the student of theosophy, the simple effort that we make to understand the three propositions, that gives us insight to the Tao that we never would have had. It gives meaning to the Tao that never would have been there. Okay, yes, SL, please.
Yes, we did have a question, but also to mention that there are a few chats that have come up too. It seems as though the Lao Tzu laid sort of a metaphysical and purposely intuitive basis to the teachings, because, as was pointed, everything was so ritualized and dogmatic. He tried to awaken what we might call higher manas.
Thank you. Yes, right.
So, in the people at that time, and so it's very difficult in his particular aspects to find the moral implications or the ethical implications, and we think Confucius and Buddha did more of that. But there was one thing mentioned in the talk which struck us as particularly applicable to our everyday lives. And that was this idea mentioned about Wu Wei, or inaction in action, or action, impersonal action in harmony with karmic law, or as the Gita would put it, acting selflessly or performing actions without attachment to the results of action, and which we think is really the foundation of all ethical teachings. So we gather that as some of the eternal wisdom we can get from his teaching practically.
Thank you. And when we study that portion of the Bhagavad Gita, and now we study that portion of the Tao Te Ching, right? This Wu Wei about, non-forceful action. We think the message there is the normal human being, the normal course of action, there's going to be some level of personal stuff in it. And because of that, it's always going to come back to us because it's not perfectly universal. When it comes back to us, we have things to learn about it. But acting without acting the master will act without acting. In other words, he will set causes in motion, the effects of which are universal in nature, not particular to him. So that is the concept of acting without acting, to know what to do, when, and how, according to the cycles. So that's in perfect harmony with the laws of nature. Anything less than that is an act, acting with acting, and it comes back to us, if that makes sense. Oh, and then there were some chats. We got okay. Let's pull up some chats. Oh yeah. Okay. So the first, hold on. Okay. Is the way that's being discussed the same as prana? Is the way that's being discussed the same as prana? Prana is the principle of life. Our understanding is the way that's being discussed is not, we see it as the way of living, the art of living and the science of life, not so much the principle prana. I think approaching that way brings to light the seven relationships resented by the trigrams. Heaven excluded as the completion. The other seven targams are now 64 hexagrams. Okay, the triad. Okay, this is beyond us. We're not sure what that's about. So karma is 31 in the Tao. Reciprocity. Yeah. Does anyone have insight into this?
This is kind of getting into divination.
Right. Okay. Yes. SL.
Just on that first question, is the way that's being discussed the same as prana? So prana is a Hindu term that means breath, it's the breath in our body, the human breath, or that principle, as distinguished from universal life, which is more spiritual, universal, the breath is more physical. In the same way, Lao Tzu speaks of qi, and there is that universal qi, our universal life force, but there's also the qi that is circulating through the body and learning to live in harmony and with that. So we think prana would be more related to that Taoist or ancient Chinese term of qi.
Okay, thank you. Okay, and then the final is Wang Bi wrote esotericism about the Tao in the answer to that question. SL, your hand was up for something different? No. Yes?
It's interesting that the Tao is arranged in topics. Various topics, transcendental aspect as a moral principle. War is also covered, and in the end, there's also miscellaneous sayings and precepts. And we like this one. It says, "He who grasps more than you can hold would be better without any. If a house is crammed with treasures of gold and jade, it will be impossible to guard them all." So, yeah, in a sense, when we're seeking spiritual knowledge and wisdom, there is a tendency to want to grasp more than we can hold, isn't there?
Isn't that the case? Yeah, and isn't it said in the voice of the silence that it's better for one not to learn anything, to remain ignorant, rather than to receive the teachings and not be ready, and not be ready for them because you could misuse them. So the balance needs to be maintained. Thank you. Yeah. SL?
What would qualify or put this book in the category of a sacred text? Because in the West, we have certain ideas of what, from our religious traditions, what a sacred text is. What would make this sacred to the Chinese or to any student of, you know, world philosophies, religions?
So what would make this Tao Te Ching, what is it about the Tao Te Ching that makes it sacred? Well, let's think about that. Perhaps, on the one hand, to actually understand it, one has to really go within and contemplate. It can be interpreted in so many ways, and no one way is the right and only way. What else makes it a sacred text? It's a text on right living and ethics. It's a text on understanding the value of an impersonal source rather than a personal God. And it actually corresponds the human being to the universe. And we'll bring that up again. What was that? That was Well, it had to do with the something about the formula of the individual is the formula of the world, and it, but the Tao is its own formula. But what it's essentially saying is that the formula of the individual, which corresponds to the world, which corresponds to the universe, which corresponds to the Tao, it's saying in essence the individual is the Tao. In certain ways it is. So any other contributions on what is it about the Tao Te Ching that makes it a sacred text? Please, JCS.
Well, in the comment, the individual to the earth to the sky to the universe to the Tao, what makes this sacred is our contemplation and consideration and testing to see if the Tao Te Ching lines up with the Gita and all these other scriptures from around the world, and where they line up, where they seem to reflect the impress of soulful wisdom, we find what is sacred. We find the original truth impressed in each and all.
Thank you. So the contribution is when we find in the Tao Te Ching or in any other sacred text for that matter, that we're able to line up the principles taught with what we know in theosophy and the fundamental propositions, then that's a sign. It points us toward, yes, the truth is to be learned there. Yes, here in the lodge.
Well, we thought we would just look up in the dictionary what, I mean, we all know, we kind of think we know what sacred means, but it says here, something set apart for religious purposes, dedicated to a deity, holy or worthy of deep reverence, and respect of books that are believed to be divinely revealed.
Thank you. Of course, the student of theosophy does not believe whether or not a book is divinely revealed. A student of theosophy reads that book and decides what is in there that fits the philosophical framework that I've accepted to be true based on my studies as a student, and what might be in there that causes me to change a few things because I can see there's things to learn that are consistent with the principles that I haven't really considered before. And when doing that, that is an indication that we have found a truth. When we learn and grow as the result of our studies, and we make adjustments in our understanding of the world and are inspired by it, then we have found a truth. Now, sometime later, we may grow in other ways and realize we kind of wrong, but it was true at the time because we grew from it, you know? Yes, all right, so there's one more hand in the back and then we have a couple of chats, please.
Is it a study of the sacred text of the voice of the silence? So we've been sitting here trying to think, okay, what makes that sacred and what makes the Tao sacred? And to this student, it seems as though both of them, we are being given a philosophy to help elevate our lower mind to the higher, and then the higher more towards Buddhi. It seems like these texts that we're studying this month will help us to become, we don't want to say more spiritual, but I guess we could say that.
More aware, okay. And to others, on a different path, or they're on the, you know, it's the path is one, but it, all according to the student, it could be that Aesop's fables is the sacred text that is appropriate to them at the time because it helps them see certain things in the light of ethics and morality that they had not yet considered. You know, it triggers something in them. Now, there are a couple chats. Let's look. It provides a pattern to model society after. Thank you. Is the word Tao the Chinese term for the theosophical term deity? Are they synonyms? All right. So what does the word Tao mean? I'm sorry? Yes. The word Tao can be translated the way. It can be translated in a couple of different ways to interpret it. We've found that it can be, of course, the way or the path. It can even mean the principle, the truth, or the reality underlying all things. So it's not so much just the deity, but the way or the path. Yes, SL, please.
And another sage said, I am the way, the truth, and the light. We're pointing to the fact that the Tao refers not just to a path of discipline and growth, but refers to that higher truth that is inherent in our highest nature, or that unity and the wisdom that comes.
Thank you. And so, you know, and so as we, you know, in these kinds of discussions, as we always find, the Tao that we're thinking of, that I read a book of, you know, it's all within us. The Tao is all within us, the truth, the light, the way, the path. It's what we follow within us in a long life's journey. Yes? No? Okay.
There's a hand up.
Oh, yes, JCS, please.
Earlier, there was a question about whether something is esoteric. And what came to mind was, can we actually label what is esoteric and what is not? Isn't it said that the minute that something is in writing, is concrete and manifest, it is now exoteric, available to all? And that's the public domain. That's the way ULT functions. That's what we focus on. So any consideration of what is truly esoteric can only be determined by our soul's ability to discern. Is that true or no?
Yeah, well, thank you. You know, that's so the contribution here is what is esoteric? What is the inner teaching? And the consideration is, well, if it's an inner teaching, then it is one which the inner man is able to recognize, is able to discern, but it is not public. It is not put out there. You know, it reminds us of kind of, you know, can we tell the truth to another individual? Can we tell someone the truth? And we're told in the teachings, really, no. We can point to the truth. We can help another see the truth in themselves, but we can't tell them what the truth is. So perhaps that's all a matter of what the purpose of the study of the ancient sacred texts is. To awaken the truth in ourselves so we can recognize it, be it esoteric, whatever we want to call it, but to open our hearts and our minds to the inner nature of man. And as we do so, we recognize the inner nature of all of us is one in universal brotherhood. So that brings us to the end of the hour, and our time is up. Thank you for coming. We'll see you Wednesday night.